the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, I'd like to say today is the best show ever. I'd like to, but I cannot.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. In just a moment, we'll go to the Ministry of Proof with Tim Ryder. Let's end now the disposal and the hair dryer discussion. We'll do this. Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hi.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Back in the late 60s, there was this wonderful problem with garbage disposal spit stuff back up. So they said, well, you know, we'll just make a garbage disposal. We'll make it run so that you put the stopper in it and then run it. But we'll just bypass the whole extra switch part and we'll make the stopper the switch. So there was a switch inside the drain hole where, guess what else is stopper-sized? Your hand.
And it would sense, the presence of the stopper.
Yeah, there was a little pressure switch that you shove the stopper in, and then you turn it, and the disposal would turn on.
But your hand is approximately the same size.
Yeah, your wrist is, my 80-year-old aunt had that in her apartment complex, and her wrist was narrow. Mine, not so much.
So tell me, I don't know what answer I want to hear here. Did this happen to you where you reached your hand and it turned on?
Yes, absolutely.
Jesus, God. How badly did that mess up your hand?
Not at all. It depends on the design of the garbage disposal. Some garbage disposals have like a plate at the top that is just got grabber tines. They're not really sharp.
Right.
And I got kind of twisted up at the grabber tines, but they didn't cut me or anything.
Oh,
so I lucked out.
All right. Well, thank God for that. That's the best and worst thing ever. That's like a Wes Craven movie in the making right there. All right.
It was a change of shorts moment, let me tell you.
Seriously. It's just like, and you can see the whole thing in your head right there.
I had something in my hand at the time, so the first impulse is to jerk out, but of course, you can't when your fist is closed.
That's terrible. I'm so glad we're entering the lunch hour. Thank you, Joe.
Have a good one, Rick.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. That's Joe. Okay, final call on this from Steve. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. How's it going? What? A friend of mine's wife was getting ready for work one morning, blow-drying her hair, while their two girls were in the tub. They splashed water on the floor. She moved, turned, or whatever, and slipped, went to grab for the wall. The blow-dryer pops out of her hand right into the tub. That thing was dead before it hit the bottom of the tub. That guy was talking about having the breaker switch inside the hair dryers. Absolutely true. The girls didn't feel a thing.
Okay.
No tingle, no nothing.
Fantastic.
At all.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Adios.
There you go. That's Steve. God bless him. Ladies and gentlemen, your president, prophet, seer, and revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
News breaking now. Drama in D.C. A bill setting a deadline for withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq has been approved by the Democratic-controlled House.
On this vote, the yeas are 218, the nays are 212.
Well, what happens next? Nancy Pelosi said the U.S. troops are policing a civil war in Iraq. It's a no-win situation.
The war in Iraq has produced a national security crisis. Our readiness is at its lowest level since the Vietnam War. We can bring our troops home. We can redeploy them out of Iraq. And we can turn our attention to the real war on terror in Afghanistan.
None of these things are going to happen.
Texas Republican Ted Poe calls the Democrats' measure a bill to surrender.
Approval of it means we vote to abandon Iraq at an arbitrary time, no matter the situation. We vote to retreat, even if it means defeat. We vote to quit while our troops are in the field. And we vote for peace at any price.
You can't do one rhyme like that because then your brain expects it to be. You can't say blah, blah, blah.
Put on an index card.
He can't say we retreat even if there's defeat, because after years of exposure to Jesse Jackson, we now all expect there to be another rhyming couplet after that. You know, the one thing Republicans just aren't very good at, they're just not good at writing. They're just not very funny, and they're not good at writing, and they're not good at creating a...
They do well at brief phrases.
They do. I was just going to say that. They do well at
and
sound
that's
bites.
What American people remember.
That,
whether they're correct or incorrect, it doesn't matter.
I was absolutely going to agree with you. The one thing that Republicans have mastered is the sound bite. Democrats, on the other hand,
try to explain things thinking people are smart. Wrong move.
You have chosen poorly.
People are not smart.
The Democrats are thinking, well, if you're looking
page 602.
If you want to be liked by the American people, use the word freedom and liberty in every sentence.
And then have a chime ringing a lot, and then a small girl crying while holding an ice cream cone.
Make sure she's white.
But you do get all those Tom Harpin guys who are like, if you look on page 612 of the congressional record, the whole Earth catalog can explain this. If any of you are familiar with Mr.
We're here to solve problems together.
No, Noam Chomsky. You'll see, and you can just hear the just spreading across Portland as people listen to that. So, yeah, seriously. So we abandoned the idea that we could solve anything or make anything better on this program.
It's impossible, really.
It can't be done.
Now, House Minority Leader John Boehner said bill Iraq is not an option.
We know what this bill is all about.
Surrender.
It's about whether we've got the courage to give victory a chance or whether we're just going to bring our troops home and give up.
Say cojones. That's only for the Spanish folks.
Didn't it feel like that's where it wanted to go when he says, if we've got the, for just, a, can you play that again? Because you can, and I say this now, you can feel the cojones coming in this sentence. Where it's like the word.
They're time-tested phrases.
That word wants to be there. You can hear the word cojones coming and then he steers away from it.
We know what this bill is all about.
Yes, we do.
It's about whether we've got the courage to give victory a chance or whether we're just going to bring our troops home and give up.
Now, beheadings in Beaverton once they enter our land. And meanwhile,
can we just agree to give the terrorists a state? You know what I mean? Just solve it all right now. State that nobody's doing anything with, like Idaho.
Draw another line in the map and call it a country.
There you go.
The Brits have done it for years.
That's what I was going to say. That's how we got Iraq anyway. So we're going to give you this little section by Sandpoint. Mm. Here you go. Have fun. You know what I mean?
Just fencing on in. Meanwhile, a California Democrat, George Miller, I think we can tell what kind of comments coming here, said that President Bush is ignoring dwindling U.S. support for the war.
The American people recognize President Bush's approach in Iraq for what it is, a failure. Instead, this president, in all of his arrogance and all of his lying, chose to choose a surge.
Well, that's going to cause a lot of trouble. So here comes the president. He is slamming for what he calls, they're trying to get the U.S. forces out of Iraq and end this war. We really don't want that.
They score political points. The Democratic majority in the House has shown it is willing to undermine the gains our troops are making on the ground. Democrats want to make clear that they oppose the war in Iraq. They made their point.
Yes, the Democrats are, well, they're being unreasonable.
These Democrats believe that the longer they can delay funding for our troops, the more likely they are to force me to accept restrictions on our commanders, an artificial timetable for withdrawal, and their pet spending projects. This is not going to happen.
Okay, now on that, he's absolutely right. On that, he's... You have to agree with the guy on that. Now, I do not fall into the, at least you know where he stands, because that doesn't make it, because that's not even true, because his administration reverses itself as often as any other administration, just not on this one issue. So, on that, he's completely correct, because no matter, as I think history of the Bush administration will show, no matter how underfunded the troops may be, no matter how ill-equipped they might be at this moment in combat, no matter how poorly we may be supporting them with equipment, body armor, no matter how shoddy and underfunded the medical care they receive might be, we'll keep sending them over there to be shot at. So threatening George Bush that you're going to underfund the troops isn't really going to help, because he's proven that he doesn't really care about that. So the troops being adequately funded has never really been a concern of this administration. So threatening more of the same, not really going to have any desired effect.
He says Democrats are playing games.
This is an important moment of decision for the new leaders in Congress. Our men and women in uniform should not have to worry that politicians in Washington will deny them the funds and the flexibility they need to win. Congress needs to send me a clean bill that I can sign without delay.
You're right on that. He's the worst public speaker ever. Is that New Time magazine out right now already, the one with Reagan crying?
Oh, I haven't seen that. I don't read news magazines. Seriously.
No one
passe. Right?
No one does, which is why they're trying to redesign. I've probably even seen this. Time is on Time magazine. I can't remember the last time I bought a Time magazine.
I can't remember the last time I've seen a Time magazine.
Well, that's the thing, is they're there, but you don't even see them.
Well, people don't go to a newsstand to buy magazines.
You know, I miss the news. Do you miss going to newsstands?
No. Okay. No Rick, just you. Forget that no Rick, it's just you.
There's no reason why you still can't go to one.
I'm not... But I don't even know where one is. They're not even in New York as much as they used to be.
In bookstores.
I suppose. When I lived in California, like San Diego had some places that were just great. They still have them now for import magazines. Like if you want to get like Q or Mojo or something, you can read like a British music magazines there or NME or something. But I... What was my point? My point is there was something... I know I'm like three things deep here, so I'll pull myself back. But there was something kind of romantic about the newsstand. And you go there, and there would be all the papers from the various cities. And the
Paris Hilton videos.
Yes. Yes. And now there's just nothing. So my point before that was Time Magazine. Time Magazine is still there, just like I think... Newsweek is still around, maybe.
I think you find those in dentist offices.
I guess. But you don't really notice them. I'm almost positive that they still stock Time at Safeway, but I don't really ever look at it or read it. I'm only sort of vaguely sure that it's there. But because this is the whole problem, that nobody reads Time Magazine anymore, because why would you? When is the last time you read a magazine wasn't horrifically out of date by the time it landed in you? God bless even the National Enquirer, which I love and have always loved. They've always been the breaking news source for, especially showbiz stuff, but even they're out of date by the time you get it. You get it, Britney Spears shaves head, and it's like 3 weeks late. So, my point is that Time Magazine is doing this huge revamp, which will not work, by the way. You might as well start putting Katie Couric in charge.
How about if they call it Real Time?
It's, that wouldn't be true either. Even Bill Maher's Real Time, which is actually by its name, of course, because we get it, I watch it delayed. Even that, occasionally, I will hear him talking about something, and just in like the couple hours between pre-production, post-production, and then broadcasting the show, news just happens so quickly now that unless you're watching a 24-hour news channel, you're screwed.
All this just happened moments ago.
That's what I'm saying. So Time Magazine is undergoing, talking about a thing that will be noticed by no one. Time Magazine is revamping their logo, the fonts they use. They're using a lot more white space because, as Tim noted earlier, they've come to the conclusion, which we reached a long time ago, that Americans don't like to read things. Americans are frightened by pages filled with tiny text that doesn't have pictures. So Time Magazine is going to be fewer words, more paragraphs, but not actually any more words. Lots of friendly white space and charts for you to look at. And there's going to be a big phrase at the top of each page that summarizes what that page's idea is. So it's basically going to be like reading the O'Reilly Factor. But the cover of the first issue of this new revamped Time Magazine has this picture of Ronald Reagan where they've done the Ironized Cody thing on him, and they've photoshopped him, they've CGI'd him like shedding a tear about the state of the Republican Party. And that's what I think about when I hear George W. Bush speak, that it really, just in the space of a decade and a half or so, we went from Ronald Reagan, who's probably the best political orator of the last 50 years.
Yes.
I mean...
Probably even better than Roosevelt.
Probably. I mean, he's just... I mean, and even listening to Reagan, even as a child listening to Reagan, I knew that it was all just empty swill. But it, God damn it, sounded great. It sounded fantastic. Ronald Reagan could, that guy's a command me to go to war and I'd probably follow him. It doesn't matter. Everything he said sounded wonderful. George W. Bush, not so much.
Well, he's not done yet. He says the Democratic decision is irresponsible.
They set rigid restrictions that require an army of lawyers to interpret. They set an arbitrary date for withdrawal without regard for conditions on the ground. And they tacked on billions for pet projects that have nothing to do with winning the war on terror.
They was promised it would be all phonetic.
The president says the Democrats have lost sight of what their job is.
Narrow majority in the House of Representatives abdicated its responsibility by passing a war spending bill that has no chance of becoming law and brings us no closer to getting our troops the resources they need to do their job.
You can tell.
They don't have them now?
No, you can tell by
all this money?
Well, I mean, the good news is
billions of billions.
With every passing day, there's really less in Iraq that even needs guarding. So, what kind of resources take to guard a big pile of dust? Seriously. The The thing is, what was my point? You can tell that he hasn't pre-read it and that he's not all that good at the reading because he doesn't know what words to stress. That's the big giveaway, that he stresses all the wrong words. It's like you can tell, it's like when somebody speaks...
I've had days like that.
A language, so have we all. When somebody speaks a language that's not their own, like if you try to speak Spanish or something, and I don't know, like I speak a little bit of Spanish. I don't know how to accent things. I never know where that little dash mark is supposed to go on anything. I got nothing. And that's exactly how he speaks English. Scotty is asking why Democrats tacked on billions for pets. Not for pets, Scotty, for pet projects.
Well, we need something to be done about the pet foods.
Yes. Now, is that
we'll get
now?
To that in a while.
Okay, yeah, was that coming all right? Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Meanwhile, elsewhere, Iranian forces have seized 15 members of the British Royal Navy. They say the incident took place in Iraqi waters after the personnel had searched the merchant ship. British Commodore Nick Lambert is hoping the men are safe.
My immediate concern, obviously, is for my people. I've got 15 sailors and marines who've been arrested by the Iranians, and my immediate concern is that their safety and their safe return to me is ensured.
And this is where? By Iran?
Yeah.
Where did it happen?
In the water.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They were searching a ship. Apparently, the search of merchant ships is a common practice.
It's actually a routine mission that we do as part of our maritime security operations of the setting the conditions to for security and stability of the marine environment here.
What? Never mind. I was going to ask why the British are searching ships around Iran.
Well, they're trying to stop people from bringing things into Iran that don't belong there.
Okay. All right. Does Iran know we're doing that? Or is that a thing that we ask, or we just sort of there doing it?
We're there doing it.
All right. Well, here
we're
you
the
go.
Policemen of the world.
God bless us.
I mean, we are the democratic torch of the world. We need to do this.
Every time I hear a British military person speak, I just picture one of those guys who stands in front of Buckingham Palace and looks like a nutcracker. Mm-hmm. Every time.
I don't want any of my friends' children to live in tyranny someday.
Let me ask you this. When it comes to this, why is it why does the strap on the hat that they wear at Buckingham Palace only come down to their lip? Why doesn't it go underneath your chin? Isn't that where the strap for a hat's supposed to go? You wear a helmet.
Suppose.
You wear a helmet, the strap goes underneath your chin, keeps from falling off.
Well, they're frugal people.
This one size only. One size fits all, sort of. Put it on now. All right. If somebody knows the answer to that, don't bother calling. Just email.
Senator McCain, who's losing popularity even in his home state of Arizona to get elected, said this incident reminds him of the beginning of the Iraq hostage crisis. Remember that way back when? It put Ted Koppel on the map. And he hopes the British think about what they do as they respond to that.
But if I were the British, I would be thinking about it, and I think I would threaten very decisive action for a gross violation of international law by the Iranians.
All right.
He says, yes, this reminds him of the Iranian hostage thing.
Remember when they took our embassy and took our American citizens hostage? We did not act forcefully and decisively, and they stayed there for an incredibly long time, and it was a humiliation to the United States of America.
Seriously, that? I guess you want to talk about what doomed Jimmy Carter, and it was that. It wasn't even that. It wasn't even the 444 days they were there as such. It was the crashed helicopters. He had this thing where they apparently weren't privy to the fact that deserts are filled with sand.
Yeah.
And so they found these helicopters. We're going to go rescue. I'm doing the Bill Clinton now, but they did the Jimmy Carter thing. We're going to go rescue the hostages. And then they picked these helicopters. They couldn't fly over sand. It's Iran. And the whole place is just sand, I think. And so that, and then when he went on television in a sweater asking everybody to turn off their heat.
Go to the bathroom in the cold. and in the dark.
I would like to say, this is Jimmy in Plains. If it is yellow, let it mellow. That is never, that's in, that no way is that ever going to get you elected. But here's the thing. The American people don't like to read, they don't like to think too much, and they don't like to turn their heat down in the winter. And appearing on television in a sweater is no way to capture the male vote in this fading republic of ours, Jimmy.
I mean, that was a yellow polyester decade.
Oh, it was.
If you watch Play Misty for Me?
Yeah. No, it's true, totally.
Clint Eastwood wearing yellow bell bottoms and paisley shirts.
Boy, Clint Eastwood looks.
That's how to attract the babes.
Yes.
As he found out.
That's exactly.
A lot of unwanted attention.
The unstable demographic really goes for that kind of clothing. So, boy, I saw Jimmy Carter the other day. Is he now the oldest living president? He's got to be.
Yes, I believe
Nixon's
so.
Nixon's dead. Ford snuffed it. It's all Carter.
Mm.
Carter, who just seems like the coolest guy. He was like building a house somewhere and then like playing softball in planes and just hanging out and growing peanuts or whatever it is he does. Just the coolest guy, but boy, that going on. I remember my dad bitching about that, about Carter going on in a sweater, and that was the thing my dad seized on for some reason. Not like any of his policies, just the fact that Carter was on television in a sweater. My dad was just infuriated by that for reasons that even now sort of escape me.
Here's Tim Riley.
Okay, so we have, first of all, let's get back to our local story. Rat poison has been found in dog food, blamed for the deaths of dogs and cats across this nation. They will not identify the chemical or its source. Well, that's very helpful.
Well, thanks for that. I appreciate that. What do you tell the vet? Something bad.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I had another...
that's a lawsuit waiting to happen if they won't identify with the chemical. You know why? Because I'm just speculating now. My opinion as a pontificator and pundit. Because in my opinion, it's because it's probably rat poison that they put inside the factory.
It was rat poison.
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably rat poison from inside the factory that was there to kill rodents that were, you know, because any factory where you make food attracts rodents.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like that's what that is.
And sad news, Zoe, a 14-year-old cat who's been fighting for her life at Dove Lewis, has died from that.
Mm.
So she had kidney problems.
Mm.
So.
All right.
You had this, this is made by Menu Foods. It's cuts and gravy style dog and cat food.
So we, and there's some website or something. There's some things.
Yeah, there's tons of them.
All right, okay.
So anyway, early this morning, these precinct officers were called to a fight in the 13,800 block of Southeast Stark. En route to the call, officers also received information that shots may have been fired. They arrived and discovered a highly intoxicated Hispanic man unconscious on the ground. He appeared to have an injury that could have possibly been from a grazing wound from a shotgun, more likely an injury from
a grazing wound from a shotgun. I don't think shotguns really graze you.
Well, I don't know. Perhaps so. Medical personnel were able to wake him up and transport him to the hospital. His injuries appeared to be non-life threatening.
This was where?
On Southeast Stark.
Of course. Of course it was on Southeast
over,
Stark.
Over on the east side.
All right. Well, you know, it's not all Christmas tree lane up there. Rick, the reason for a chin strap this is the chin strap versus the lip strap. This is why the British guys have always got that strap that just comes down to the lip. The reason for a strap to only come down to the lips instead of the chin is for when they go into battle. The lip strap gives them something to bite down on because pillows are too cumbersome on the battlefield. That's Steve. Thank you, sir. That's Steve and Canby. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, the Miss USA pageant is tonight, and Miss New York USA is ready. Gloria Almonte is one of 51 women competing for the crown, which will be passed on by the embattled current title holder, Tara Conner. You remember her.
Is she the one who's all, look at my boobs, and can I have some cocaine?
Mm-hmm. She spent time in rehab for drug and alcohol addiction. She gave the contestants some good advice, apparently.
Just be yourself. Be real with yourself and to others. And if one of us were to receive her title, to just do the best we can with it and not let it go to our head and not use it to do the types of things that she was doing with it.
And don't forget to help the retarded.
I'm just serious.
And what? Don't forget to help the retarded. That's what they used to say.
That's going
to
be our new, sign-off phrase.
Hold on. We're going to end every day's show with that. It's no longer going to be the Let the Bastards Grind It. It's going to be the Don't Forget to Help the Retarded.
And again, I'm writing it down right now. And don't do what she did with it. Don't become a cracked out whore, won't you please? And because especially all of that stuff predates her winning whatever. I don't even know what pageant this is. Why do these pageants still exist? I don't know if this is sort of a whole Andy Rooney thing, but seriously. As we fall further and further behind the Japanese every single day in everything. Maybe it's because we're training our young girls to dream of growing up to be vacuous whores who are filled with drugs. And don't forget to help the retarded. What pageant is this?
Miss USA.
Is that the one that's for married chicks?
No. Well, they're not supposed to be married.
Miss USA, they can't be married. I don't think they can have kids.
What's Miss America?
That's a different one.
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Well, should we stop this now?
Yes. Well, it's based on the same idea. It's just a different pageant.
It's the RC to Miss America's Pepsi.
Exactly.
Don't forget to help the retarded. Isn't that right, Donkey?
Let's do one more and then we'll break. All righty, well, I just had one here. I'm in the middle of two different things. Please bear with me.
Hold on. I'll help you out while you just...
A presidential spokesman, Tony So, is undergoing surgery Monday. to remove a growth in his lower abdomen.
Oh, there's no... Is there any more hideous word than that? That's the worst thing you can have removed from your body is a growth. Because a growth... Now, which is worse, a growth or a polyp?
I don't like the sound of polyp.
A polyp sounds like some sort of... Doesn't a polyp sound like some sort of fruit from the Amazon that has like a sort of... Has like a sort of thin skin, but then it's all mushy inside. You have to scoop out the polyp and then boil it. Yeah. Then you can make yourself some preserves. But here's the thing about a growth. First of all, a growth, when I think about it, it sounds all spiky and hairy for some reason. It sounds like a bumpy sort of hair covered wart of some kind. A growth. And the other thing about having a growth removed is that a growth sounds like some sort of weird alien thing that they found in your body because they can't really even identify it. They can't say, well, it's a tumor, or they can't say, well, it's a hangnail that's gone bad, or they can't say, well, it's whatever. It's a small section of your...
No, it's a hangnail.
Yeah, it's a tumor. They can't say, well, it's a small section of your lung that's become inflamed. It's just a growth. I mean, calling it a growth is another way of just calling it a thing. That's really what that is. What's happened?
Well, we've been looking at the x-rays, Miss Dillon, and, well, we've discovered a growth that is,
and they always try to sound so faux casual with that, too, when you're in the office.
We've discovered a growth, and, you know, it's given us some concern, and, so what we're probably going to do is excise that and just have a look, see what's going on, and, you know, hopefully it's nothing, but we want to address this now, as opposed to down the road when the, you know, the growth could be presenting a problem for.
What they're saying, when every time they say growth, they're saying thing. There's a thing inside you, and we don't know what it is. There's a thing that can't be explained, ever, by anybody, and we've got to cut it out and burn it with fire and drive a stake through it. That's the next time your doctor says growth, substitute thing in your head, and you'll start to understand how cancer and garbage disposals will kill us all. It's 503-73. Please help the retarded, won't you?
Please help Tony Snow deal with his growth. They're not disclosing what it is. We have a feeling it's ego.
That's a
sense of uncertainty.
It's growing beyond control. A growing sense of impending doom in his lower left extremities.
I just handed you that one.
It's way better than the joke I had all teed up. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Isn't that right, Donkey? It's 503-733-2970. I have to quit laughing right into the microphone like that. 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. Don't go anywhere.
I don't like you anymore.
Okay. 503-733-2970. Rick, about growth. A growth doesn't seem all that bad on the list of things that can appear within your body. What if you had a large growth in your pants? You know what's unpleasant is a goiter. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Goiter?
Barely do it.
Well, so it wasn't a joke the other day when we said Osama bin Laden is Irish.
Okay. Would you like to take another run at that?
Sure. It appears that we weren't joking the other day when we said, oh my.
don't worry, it's going to happen more and more frequently.
Oh my God.
With all my years of experience. I wonder how many others have done this so far. Wait till the debates start.
Oh, you know it's going to happen. It happened. I'm pretty sure it's happened on CNN. I'm pretty sure that on CNN. Or was that just a Chiron? Remember there was a thing on Chiron that said, where's Osama? And it was like a tracking Barack Obama's campaign. Whatever, and I'm pretty sure they said Osama. I'm not really sure I've heard anybody wholesale swap out the names until just now, though. So it's going to happen more and more frequently, though. You'll be one of dozens of reporters who do it. And you know it's going to happen at least once during the debate. Mm-hmm. And a Republican will do it, probably by accident, because that's the way life works. And then
this is good practice.
There will be endless debate about an argument about whether it was an accident or whether they, because like,
is that happened on Fox?
Totally. And I have all the respect in the world for Mr. Osama, but I just think, and they'll point out later, you know, was it a mistake or was it a carefully crafted piece of political showmanship? All right. Well, anyway, what about Obama?
Well, Mr. Barack Obama can now count himself as one of the millions of Americans with Irish heritage. So he's a modern-day Kennedy, really.
Really?
Research by the genealogy website, ancestry.co.uk.
Wait, hold on, sir. Can you drop this a little bit?
Reveals that Mr. Obama's great-great-great-grandfather was born in Ireland, although it's not yet known where it was. Not that big of a place, really. Falmouth Kearney sailed from Ireland to New York in 1850 at the age of 19, arriving on the 20th of March. He initially settled in Ohio, got married, had 8 kids, and later moved to Indiana, right next door to the state Obama currently represents in the U.S. Senate. Mr. Kearney was part of the Great American Migration to escape the 1840s potato famine in Ireland. If Mr. Obama gets elected, he would be the first multiracial U.S. president in history and join a long list of those with Irish ancestry, including Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, and, of course, JFK. So there you have it.
Here's a dumb question. Is the potato famine because there were no potatoes or because there were only potatoes? Do you know the answer?
I'm not asking the question.
Well, some of us like to learn things we don't know, Sarah Dillon. Some of us like to fill the gaps in our knowledge. Some of us just drink. We're all really, really giddy today. I don't know.
You're being mean today.
I'm not being mean enough. To whom am I being mean?
Nobody.
That's what I thought. Isn't that right, Donkey?
Well, the great famine...
Donkey.
That's the second time. I'm going to get a bell to ring. That's the second time Jim's responded to, isn't that right, Donkey?
The great famine, or the great hunger, as it's known in Ireland. An end given to the famine in Ireland between 1845 and 1849. The famine was due to the appearance of the potato blight. It instantly destroyed the primary food source for the majority of the island's population. The immediate after effects of the famine continued till 1851. Much is unrecorded because everyone died or escaped, and various estimates suggest that between 500,000 and 1 million people died in the 3 years from 1846 to 1849 as a result of hunger or disease. That's about 12% of the population. About 2 million refugees are attributed to the Great Hunger, and about the same number of people immigrated to Great Britain, the U.S., Canada, and Australia. The notable difference between the famine and other humanitarian crises is that it occurred within an imperial homeland at the time into modern prosperity in the Victorian Industrial Age, and nobody cared about these shanty Irish. With respect to the geography, the famine would appear to belie many of the typical circumstances in which imperialistic... Wow, this sounds like a Democratic answer, doesn't it? You're listening to Air America.
I was just going to say, Tom Hartman, ladies and gentlemen. Good God Almighty. Hey, how do you suppose Scotty spells famine?
Wasn't that one of the words yesterday?
It should have been. He would have gotten it wrong. P-H-A-M-O-N. Famone. It sounds like some sort of a scent that you'd wear. It's 503-733-2970. I would like to point out, by the way, didn't we, months ago, jokingly refer to him as being Irish? Barack Obama.
And we did on St. Patrick's Day as well.
We did as well. We are so far ahead of the curve on this. The Rick Emerson Show, we make the news. Other people simply cover. And by make, I mean create and fabricate. Let's see. Potato famine calls. Do I really want to take these?
Sounds educational to me.
I don't know. I may have to ponder it. Well, sure. Why not? Let's, hello, sir. Potato famine.
Hello, yes. This is Jesse O'Grable. How are you?
Hi. Please don't do
that. Yeah. Actually, I wanted to congratulate, Mr. Riley back there for, enlightening you on a potato famine.
So my many services.
Yes, because now that you know, you don't need to ask any more questions. You know that it was caused by the potato blight.
All right.
There you go. Have fun. Bye-bye.
And it was unnecessarily brusque.
It was.
I have follow-up questions, you dick.
About the potato famine?
Yes. Chris, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. And, yeah, it's caused by a disease called potato blight that wiped out the crop. And
I
the
just
reason
said
it was,
that.
such a problem was that potatoes were so cheap and the yield is really high per acre. Mm-hmm. And so the poor Irish people were overly reliant on the crop and they overplanted and then just wiped everything out.
Okay, now I know I'm not the first one to have asked this question. John Munch asked this question once, but I don't think it's ever been answered. Ireland is an island.
Correct.
An island is surrounded by water. Water is filled with fish.
I can't hear anything with Irish music.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
We always have to ruin everything, don't we?
I'm sorry, I ruined my whole comedic flow. I'm just saying, I don't mean to make light of this. I'm simply asking, are you telling me that millions of people died because they didn't want to go fishing? I mean, it's an island. It's surrounded by fish.
You're not a fish-eating people.
Yeah, but you can't eat only fish.
You can't eat only potatoes.
The people that were affected were the dirtiest poor. So, I mean, they didn't have any boats to fish on.
They didn't have a fishing pole.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, so you... Okay. I mean, did they really just eat potatoes? Because it doesn't seem like that's a... Oh, he's gone. That doesn't seem like that's a ticket to a long life either.
Look at the people in Russia.
Mumsy, what's for dinner? I can't do an Irish accent. Well, we'll be having potatoes. And then for lunch. Potatoes?
That's not an Irish accent.
What about second breakfast? Potatoes. Lunch? Potatoes. Shut up. when will we have something that's not potatoes? Never.
I bet you can make a lot of delicious things out of potatoes.
You can make it. All right. The fish are right over there in the water. It's an island. Surrounded by fish. That's all I'm saying.
There may not be fish over there anymore.
Well, not anymore. I'm not going to talk to George Wilsonville, Scotty. Thank him. Thank him, pat him on the head, and then send him away. Here's Tim Riley with the Ministry of Lies. The Ministry of Lies and Half-Truths.
Well, the question on everyone's mind today is, did Harry Houdini really die in 1926 from a ruptured appendix separate after a punch to the stomach, or was his death tied to foul play? A lot of people want to know that all of a sudden today for some reason. And that's the question Houdini's only living relative wants answered. The escape artist's great-grandnephew, George Hardine, I don't know how he proves that he's the great-grandnephew, but he says he is, says evidence collected by two authors suggests Houdini may have been poisoned by his enemies. He's now calling for the body to be exhumed from the Queens New York Cemetery, and the historic record must be set straight.
Actually ascertain exactly what might have killed Harry Houdini, whether he was in fact poisoned. And there appears to be only one way to do that.
People must be punished.
There have to be floggings. This is the new method. If you are talentless or destitute on your own, find a famous relative and then insist that he was shot in the head by Buddy Holly or whatever the hell that little bopper kid was screaming about. And then have your poor dead relative dug up and poked and prodded in a laboratory for no reason. And then they just...
What's the latest thing?
It's the new fad. And then they just say, no, he was just a drunk. And then they stick him back in the ground. So there you go, Harry Houdini. I always heard that he had this whole thing where he was practicing his stomach muscle strength, and that he would tense his stomach and he'd let people just whack him in the stomach as hard as you possibly could, but a guy punched him when he wasn't ready for it. Bam, ruptures the appendix. Hey, hey, I'm dead. So there you go, Harry Houdini. I had some other joke prepared. As soon as you said Harry Houdini, my brain created some joke, and now it's gone. I never got a chance to use it. No. Oh, I will tell you this, though. Here's a little fascinating insight into the world of Rick, which nobody really cares about, probably. The Harry Houdini had this thing where he wanted to know once and for all if there was such a thing as communicating with the dead, like with Ouija boards or through a medium or through, I don't know, Clyde spinning a wheel of cheese or something. And so he wanted to know if you could die and then come back. And so Harry Houdini had a code phrase that he and his wife shared. And he said, because he didn't want it to be taken in by a swindler or a medium, and he said, this is the phrase, the secret phrase we will use. Once I am dead, go to a medium, have her try to contact me, and you will know it is me because I will use this secret phrase. Now, unfortunately, and then she goes to the medium after he's dead, and the medium does, in fact, say, hey, Harry's here, and he's using the secret phrase, blah, blah, blah. But it turns out that he had shared the secret phrase with somebody else, and then word had leaked before he died. I will tell you this. Although I do not believe in such hokum, Lara and I have, each of us, we each have a secret phrase that should one of us die in an untimely manner, that the other can use to determine if there's ever a post-life communication. I don't believe in such things, but she kind of does. And so there is a secret phrase that I have given Laura that that I will use should I ever communicate with her from beyond the grave. Isn't that fascinating? Are you glad I spent 90 seconds that you will never get back? You could have
well,
listened.
Well, now I want to know the phrase.
I can't tell you, though, because...
I know.
See,
can't you
can't
call?
I especially can't say it here. This is the attack of freaks out there. Well, totally, you'll be calling her,
hello, Stitch and Tom 6-9. The one was a man from Nantucket.
And then they'll say,
what kind of phrase is it? Is it like a movie quote?
Will you say it at 7:16 Monday morning?
I bet it's a song lyric.
Be listening Thursday at 7:21 when the Breakfast Flakes use Rick Emerson's post-mortem phrase of the day. No, I won't. I should totally. I just had this whole bit play itself out of my head where there's a DJ trying to communicate from beyond the dead, and it's a whole request line thing. And she has a phrase that she will use, although I... See, here's the thing. The sad truth is, if she dies early, it doesn't matter. Because I'm never going to bother, like, trying to... I'm not that guy. I'm not a superstitious guy or whatever. So I would probably never attempt it. But if I die early, then she will go to whatever, some Clyde freak who will say, yes, I'm... Do you know someone with an R in his name? And then they'll try to talk to me. My phrase for her, I will say this. My phrase for her is a sentence from a book, Sarah, that I have given you to read. That's all I'm going to say.
Have I already read it?
Yes. You realize
I know exactly. I know exactly what book it's from.
It's officially interesting to no one.
I bet I know exactly what it's from.
You can't say it, though.
I know.
Because then somebody will go and they'll like, no, they won't. No one will do that. Who am I kidding?
Somebody will go and let
Tim has
stop.
Now just opened up the newspaper and he's just reading.
It's coupon day.
Reading the fries coupons as we talk. And I will say
now
this.
I can't put it down.
Her phrase for me.
I don't want to buy anything there. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm interrupting some of the conversation.
I'm just going to say her phrase for me is a song lyric. My phrase for her is a passage from a book. Her phrase for me is a song lyric. That's it. End of discussion. I'm sorry I brought the whole thing up. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, those in the know reports Kenny Couric has been kicking up her heels, spending late night hours hot on the town. It appears that trumpeter Chris Botti is her new love. They're romancing. According to the New York Post, Botti and the anchor lady stepped out into New York this week for a cozy romantic candlelight dinner there near the musician's Manhattan apartment. Now, it's not known if she went inside after the meal. 50-year-old Couric, yeah, she's 50. And 44-year-old Botti, she's robbing the cradle, have reportedly been dating on and off for several years now. She was previously in a 4-year relationship with TV mogul Tom Werner, but that didn't get her where she wanted to go. It ended in 2004. Couric has two daughters with her late husband, Jeff Moynihan. So once again, Katie Couric has been seen out in late night hours.
Well, okay. I'm sure that'll manifest itself in higher ratings any day now.
He's going to be slouching on the anchor desk.
Here I am with the news. I'm sorry. I'm feeling a little ragged today. Let's see. Really? Okay, fine. I'll just...
One fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Hi, George. Oh, after all that... Oh, you sons of bitches. All right. Let's see. But, Scotty, now you're just trying to misspell potato. Kevin, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick, I have a theory on why people didn't just walk to the ocean to fish.
Okay. Is this going to be a funny theory?
Not really.
Okay. Is it going to be a theory that's a pun of some kind?
No.
Okay. I guess that's good. Okay.
Ireland's about 200 miles long in north-south and about 100 miles wide east-west.
Right.
Where do you suppose all these hungry, starving people are going to eat on the 50-ish mile walk to the coast?
I'm sorry?
And once they get...
Well, they didn't have anything to eat anyway. I'm just saying... I'm not trying to pick on the Irish. I'm just saying...
Oh, no, I'm just saying is all.
We can either stay here in this mud hut or whatever it is we live in and die, or we can walk, get a move on to where they keep the fish. That's all I'm saying.
A little bit about coastal fishing. Fish don't usually congregate.
Really? Did you really use... Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They don't usually congregate right there in the waters exactly by the shore, so you have to go out a little ways.
Right, they know people are hungry and going to catch them, so they're going to hang around.
They're savvy Irish fish. So the Irish...
now they're walking 50 or so miles to the shore, depending on how far away they live from the center of the island.
And then the Irish fish... The Irish
then
have to...
Once they get there, there's the entire population of the country living on the shore in a really crowded area. And now they're all going to compete for wood to build boats so they can go out a little ways to try and catch fish. All of them out there together, shouting at each other with Irish accents.
Is it wrong that I'm just viewing this as a really, really funny reality program directed by Danny Boyle and starring Ewan McGregor?
I'm just saying, it's not really... The fact that it's an island doesn't really mean that it's... You know, I've been to the beach before, and I've never once been hit by a flying fish as I was looking for a hot dog.
This has now become some sort of insanely brilliant poetry. All right. Thank you, Kevin.
He's so mad.
He is mad.
Is he still always humorless, angry?
You didn't put his mind at rest.
I don't believe he was satisfied with the outcome of that call. Rick, a little bit about coastal fishing.
Why don't they do lobstering then?
Should we take that up? Seriously, no, as soon as he said a little bit about coastal fishing, right, I could just hear like the banjo music starting in my head from This American Life. Oh, God. Yeah, he was an angry and humorless man. That's what he was. Hope that works out. To try to cheer up, my friend. Let's see. Well, let's go back to Tim, and then we'll take this call that says, I don't know what to make of this. Accident with guy in AM 970 shirt.
There aren't too many.
Our refrigerator's making weird noises. Here's Tim Riley.
Sounds like a donkey.
That's really scary sounding.
Well, McDonald's is fattening up its menu, testing the concept of putting one-third of a pound of beef on a bun. It'll be the biggest burger yet. This is the Angus Third Pounder. It's being tested in California with all those bulimic women down there. It tastes really big, apparently. It's super-sized, big, and tasty. The patty is a little bit like a bigger, better quarter pounder. The question is, what took so long? It comes in a world of so-called premium burgers, and McDonald's is following the herd of others. The Angus Third Pounder is being tested at McDonald's throughout Southern California. Good luck. There are three different versions at $3.99 each. The Angus Deluxe, Angus Mushroom, Swiss, and English Bacon and Cheese. It's the same price as the so-called $6 burger, which Carl Jr. rolled out, followed by Hardee's, which we don't have around here, which is actually a half pound each. So, both fast food chains are owned by CKE restaurants. The burgers have been a huge hit for the company, and one reason Burger King followed with its own Angus burger. The burgers we talked about in all these three companies have slimmer margins of profit. Oh, but they are going to make much more money. The burgers still account for 50% of the $123 billion fast food industry.
Yeah, but that's a bad business to be in right now. It's just they're being whittled away at by like boutique places, and the people just don't want to shove half a pound of meat into their mouth every day for lunch.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I have to address this.
That is ridiculously loud.
You can't hear this at home.
Why, it sounds like a barrel of bees.
All right, can you crank up my mic here? This is what the refrigerator is making.
Do you want to try and use...
I don't think you can hear it.
I'm sure this is fascinating for everyone.
Really incredibly loud sound coming out of our refrigerator here. All right, well, that's comforting. Especially because we moved it over here, the guy was like, after you move it, let it sit for a day before you plug it in or the Freon will gas you. It's 503-733-2970. How to avoid famine, says this call. Okay. Billy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Billy.
Okay. Peter, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, so... let me start off by saying Tim Riley, best newsman ever.
You are correct, sir.
Why, thank you.
Oh, man. Love that guy. Anyways.
I wouldn't work anywhere else.
So I'm sitting at a Taco Bell, and I'm looking out into the street on Beaverton Hillsdale Highway.
Uh-huh.
And this guy is, like, sitting in the turn lane, and he's trying to turn into the road. And this car bangs right into the back of him. And the guy who was trying to get in, because he, like, shot over... He gets out of his car. They're both getting out. It's this huge Mexican guy. and they start screaming at each other, and he turns around, and the guy is wearing a big, what almost looks like a homemade big AM970 t-shirt.
Fantastic.
I just started laughing like out loud in the restaurant.
Now, this is the guy who caused the accident is wearing this shirt. Can you drop my mic a little bit? I'm sweating.
As it should be.
Yeah, he's got a big ponytail and a long goatee, and I kid you not, has the goatee braided with a bead at the end of the goatee, and he is screaming in the middle of the road at the guy who hit him. And I seriously sat there for about 15 minutes after I was finished eating, just watching this unfold. It was unbelievable.
Now, is he a heavy set man?
Oh, it's huge. I don't even know how he fit this car. It was like a Ford Tour. Needed to get him out on a regular day anyways.
I'm running through the beat in my head if I could conceivably know who this is.
An enormous man with a beard with a bead at the end of it.
Well, I didn't
think we ordered t-shirts that big.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, what color was the shirt, sir?
The shirt was like a heather gray. Like I said, it almost looked homemade.
It has to have been homemade.
But okay, it just said, like, in big blocks, it had like a little rectangle, and like half of it was red, half it was black, and it just said AM970 across it. And it wasn't like a Kissin' t-shirt or anything. It just cracked me up. I was
That's so great. Attention advertisers, that's so fantastic. Did they come to blows at any point?
No, they just started arguing, and then they just exchanged information. Like they were both physically fine. But I'm on my way to work now, so I couldn't stay to see the end of it. But I seriously, like, my sides hurt from laughing so hard. It was unbelievable. I feel like I needed to let you guys know.
And I love the idea, and big, big, big men do this sometimes. Huge men, and then they have the beard that is tightly braided, because I think they think that it's like a vertical stripe that makes them look more svelte. And that doesn't really work. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Excellent. God bless you, sir. Thank you.
Oh, I almost forgot. The best thing about this guy, had rings on his fingers, was doing the double finger point at this guy. Two fingers, thumb out, pointing at the guy, pointed to him, pointed to the damage on his car, and then pointed back to him.
This is a whole lot of, like, when you go to McDonald's and there's the pictograph menu for people who can't speak any English at all.
Yeah, no, it was great, and I saw him. He did give him the double finger point into the chest.
Fantastic!
It was unreal. I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite like that.
What intersection was this at again?
Okay, it was on Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. It's like basically Beaverton Hillsdale Highway and like where Garden Home meets.
Sure.
There's like a Fred Meyer's there. It's like two blocks from my house. It is. I
Excellent.
people drive poorly in Tigard anyways, but this was pretty great.
Genius. Excellent. Peter, God bless you, sir. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
You have a great day. Thank you for listening.
Yep.
There we go. That's Peter. Excellent. The double finger point right into the chest, too. At the car. You, because the other guy, what did he say? The other guy was a big Mexican guy?
Mm-hmm.
You hit
my Taurus.
My Taurus. And then it's a Taurus.
But it could have been the car that he waited all his life for, and he finally gets his own slams into it. Dreams are dashed.
Just a huge, billowy white man in a Taurus. Oh, it's so perfect. Oh. God, I think somebody sent me some video of Ted Kennedy slurring. It says, play this for
that
Tim.
That must be hard to find.
So play this for Tim. Let's do it right now, then we'll break.
All right.
Let's just see. Oh, wait. Oh, no. You know what this is?
No.
Oh.
I think I got it, too.
What are the most difficult problems he or she will face in 2008?
There you go. Why don't we just ask Obama, what is since he won by such a big amount.
That's fantastic. Let's hear that one more time, shall we? This is Ted Kennedy.
What are the most difficult problems he or she will face in 2008?
There you go. Why don't we just ask Obama, what is since he won by such a big amount?
Oh, that's genius.
Osama Obama.
And then
it's hard not to do.
It really is. And then right, the comments below this on YouTube are hilarious. How does he keep getting reelected? And then below that, well done, you effing drunk. It just says in all caps. Oh, good God.
Well done. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.